from the city of Beaky Blinders, Birmingham, England, I would like to introduce you to Paddy Dandar.
Hi there. Welcome to the Peaky Agilist podcast, where I get curious about all things agile. Simply put, agile is about responding to change as quickly as possible, which can be pretty useful in today's fast-paced world. In each episode, I'll be inviting authors, thought leaders, and a few friends to share their stories and insights in everyday language that even I can understand. So sit back, grab a samosa or two, and enjoy.
I was reading about Wikispeed, and you know, somewhere it mentions that you can change the whole car in every 7 days, or you could even change, it's modular, so you could change bits and pieces of the car in as much time as it takes to change a tire. But looking back at how, you know, Wikispeed has evolved, is there something that you would have done differently?
Yes. Yes.
And that's the question that I get asked often, and I ask myself as well. You know, we're all on these journeys where we're developing things, where we're looking at developing new ideas and stuff. And, you know, we reach a point where everything seems to function really well. But then, you know, when in your reflective phase, you have these moments when you think, oh, I wish I could have done that differently. So tell us a little bit about that.
I'm honored you thought to ask what I thought or felt about that, Bonnie. Thank you. Looking back at Wikispeed, there's a few really important changes I would have brought to it now. I would have made our own electric motor module in-house. When Wikispeed first started, it was electric tech was not yet as per cost as competitive. Now electric is the cheaper way to go farther and faster. When Wikispeed started in 2006, electric was actually already further along than a lot of people gave it credit, but still it cost more to go as far as fast, and I was super cash constrained. I funded most of Wikispeed myself out of what should have been or could have been my down payment on a house. So I didn't. I stayed in an apartment longer, and I bootstrapped a car company. But I just didn't have that much cash. What happened though is that meant not only did I say it's gasoline to start, we did switch to electric, but to start it was gasoline, but also I was going to buy an existing gasoline engine and transmission and emission scrubbing system as a unit. And the best one, the most energy efficient gasoline, so per drop of gasoline, how many kilowatt hours of energy comes out, at that time was made by Honda Motor Company. And I was really impressed by Honda's engineering at that time. And so we bought that engine from Honda, and the first few Wikispeed cars had the Honda R18A engine in it, and it's matching transmission and emission system. And we got this thing that they had developed. Well, they changed their supply chain model and they stopped selling those engines for a number of reasons. And we were stuck. We were stuck because that's what happens when you don't have the knowledge to do it in-house. You're at the whim of the market. And if there's a global disruption, like a tsunami, you're disrupted if any of your supply chain is disrupted. So one, we had a longer, bigger, and therefore higher risk and higher delay supply chain. Two, we paid for Honda's profit, which at that time I felt pretty good about because their engineers at that time were awesome. So I was happy for them to get some money every time I made money. I thought it was socially just, right? They're really doing good work. But it made my product more expensive. So I had increased cost, increased risk. I couldn't innovate. I couldn't penetrate into that product to innovate it, even if I had good ideas. I'd outsourced that innovation and that ended up not working. Honda withdrew selling that as a product, and Wikispeed was stuck. We went several years pivoting to different engine techs, and for a number of reasons, not having a good match. Then we finally did the same thing with electric. We found a company that would make a modular electric drivetrain, and we hired them to consult. So instead of just buying it as a standalone like we did with Honda, we then hired the company to consult on implementing it into the car. And it also wasn't the right fit. What ultimately happened is the car couldn't be charged unattended. And I said, if you can't charge the car and go have dinner or leave it overnight and have zero worry, this is not a product I can sell. So I actually have one of those cars myself, and I can't sell it to anyone. I mean, maybe some people would buy it. I wouldn't feel good selling it to anybody. So I'd be like, this is a risk. You have to watch this thing be charged or it might burn your house down, right? So it's not ready. It doesn't meet the definition of done. So that company wasn't able to get there. Whereas what Musk did is Musk said, I'm going to learn how to make an electric motor myself, like from raw materials. And so instead of hiring someone else to do it, I'm going to do it. And I'm going to learn to make batteries myself and the electronics and the software myself. And I will hire teams around me to help me do it better, but I will do it. It's outsourcing that knowledge, not even hiring a team to go figure it out. Again, a gap between the way the Musk company runs a company and most companies, right? So Musk is, I am going to cut metal and wind wires around it and make a motor, right? And he does. And then he hires people that do it around him to scale it and improve it. And then he'll go work on other things nearby, but he's still a member of that team. Well, then that knowledge is in-sourced. The motor module became Wikispeed's primary Achilles heel and the reason we only made 14 cars. And I would absolutely do that differently. I would bring that in-house. But I'm going to go a little bit philosophical, if you'll let me. There's this statement that has never been shared outside Wikispeed, and I wanted to. I didn't know how to say it. Why did Tesla succeed and Wikispeed didn't? And in some ways, Wikispeed succeeded, not like Tesla did. Why? Wikispeed set 4 world records. Wikispeed beat Tesla in the Automotive X Prize. We went nose to nose with Elon Musk and won on the world stage. Why did Wikispeed ultimately make 14 cars? And why did Tesla make more than 14 cars at a profit? And why does Wikispeed employ nobody now? We're a volunteer system. We still have lots of people, but Musk can employ tens of thousands of people. So why did that happen? And I remember when I funded Wikispeed, self-funded, like Musk self-funded Tesla. Now, he had already had PayPal, so he had 170 million. I had 25,000. Still though, like, you know, for your means, what do you do? And I was looking at factories, really cheap factories were like not close to a nice area. They were kind of out in the middle of not great places. The schools around, either there weren't schools around or the schools weren't good. Like there weren't grocery stores nearby or even within 30 minutes. You know, they were more challenging places to live. You don't have the conveniences of awesome schools and a really safe neighborhood and museums and libraries and really good, robust internet. The cheap factories were kind of far out there, and they were decrepit old buildings that were leaky and cold with broken pipes and smelled like mold. Like, that's what it was, broken windows and holes in the ceiling. And I was saying to my new family, okay, I want to go for this. I want to buy one of these factories. If I can swing it, I don't have money to buy this and something else. So we'll need to live in the factory. And my family's like, no, we're not going to do that. And I don't mean to push it all on my family. I agreed. I said, okay, instead, let's get a house. And then later, if I get money, we'll get a house in a nicer school district. And that's actually what prevented Wikispeed from growing. And if you look at what Musk did, Musk sleeps in the factories even still today. And my family would complain, Joe, you go off and do Wikispeed. And I'd say, family, do it with me. But it's not their passion necessarily. So I'd say, if you want to spend time with me at Wikispeed. It's what I love to do. I feel really alive doing it. And they'd say, we want to do other stuff, and we want you to do some of that with us. And we want you to do it not looking at your phone and doing Wikispeed stuff, or not exhausted from doing Wikispeed all the time. We want your energetic attention on these things. And I did. And I had great fun doing a lot of cool stuff with my family. Musk didn't. Musk famously said when he was married to a supermodel, what some people say is the most attractive lady in the world, he was dating her. He'd say, I spend up to 5 hours a week with her because that's the maximum allotment. And ultimately, Musk had, I think, 4 divorces and is no longer dating that model. So he said, my relationships aren't the priority. And I said, yeah, my family is a priority. Truly, that's the time I would have used to figure out how to make an electric motor. So Musk is willing to completely fail, and I wasn't. Musk is willing to, he's not, I think, ejecting his family or friends from his life. He's just saying, this is my life. And I wasn't willing to do that. If I had to do it again, I would have bought one of those decrepit factories and lived in it. And if my spouse at that time had said, this isn't for me, I would have said, I totally respect you. I love you as a person and I want you to be really happy. But if this isn't for you, I will cheer you on in your life pursuing your things. But I guess we're not walking the same path, and that's okay. I would have done that earlier.
Wow, thank you so much for bringing that out, because I think this is one of the most important things that, you know, we as young people also kind of tackle it. And not just young, I think everyone's kind of tackling this thing about the career and the personal life balance. And I mean, is there a balance, first of all? And if there is, then how?
Well, the winning recipe truly seems to be, and I'm willing to be wrong, but truly seems to be, you wake up and you start doing this thing, and then you go to sleep when you're done doing that thing, and that's the thing you do, and it's all the time. So it's got to be healthy and refreshing, and it should be relaxing. I think it should be luxurious. Truly, it should be wonderful, like orange juice on a terrace. If that's your definition of luxury. A lot of movies, when they show luxurious people, that's what they're doing for some reason. They're having orange juice on a terrace. That seems to be a thing. And they're usually with 2 buttons undone and a white shirt. That's a thing. Like, just usually, if a movie is trying to show you a luxurious life, that's often what they do. I'm with you, Patty. I think you've got it.
I don't have the shirt, so it looks like I failed straight away.
Oh, you were hilarious. You were hilarious. And they have very good hair. Like Bonnie's got going on today. But what you're doing is, you're not reading a book that's off topic. It's not that people shouldn't read books that are off topic, but you're just keenly interested in this thing all day. And that's what you do. And you don't go off to, I don't know, your workout routine has got to be part of this. Your nutrition has got to be part of this. But it's a continuum. You then, how can I say it? You just don't do anything that's not in line with comfortable, exciting, healthy service of this goal, period. And what that means, I think that's like a stage of friendship. Like, you don't go to the coffee shop and talk about life. A very controversial Twitter personality, life, math, money, who's an anonymous Twitter account and says some really in your face stuff, really controversial stuff. Some of which is really thought provoking, tweeted, if you go to a coffee shop to discuss life, you're a loser. And they said, focused people don't do that. They don't have time. And they said, that's a lifestyle created by sitcoms. It's not real. Don't do it. I was like, that's thought provoking. I cannot imagine Musk at a coffee shop to talk about life. I can't imagine Musk at a coffee shop talking about rocket motors. And, you know, because it's all connected. And it's not like you don't go to coffee shops. In fact, that's an awesome thing to do. And you're surrounded with other people who want to be immersed in the topic that you're immersed in. And that ends up finding other people who are super passionate and focused, because they can converse and construct at the same level that you now can. And the way you create that quality of that environment around you is by being someone of that quality. So you know and are doing enough about that topic that other people at such a high level have a meaningful conversation with you. Like, if you wanted to be Musk's friend, you'd need to know as much or more about some of the topics Musk likes as Musk. And then you would be Musk's friend. Like, it's because because that's what it is. Musk wants to talk about rockets, electric cars, telecommunications, and embeddable electronics all day. And if you know that stuff as well as Musk, you would be talking about them all day too. So you'd probably be doing it together, which is what friends are. But if someone wants to talk to you about any other topic, you would view that as what it is, a distraction. And you'd be like, I guess we're not friends. So there's this level of, like, when you're a little kid, you have friends and it's who's around you. And you just try to be friendly with whoever's around you. And your parents and school kind of constructs that. And then you go to school and it's, again, who's around you. It's your school. And of that, you try to pick, and people figure out cliques, and there's some bad social behaviors like bullying that come out of that. And, you know, we try to help that time, but it's still out of the group you're around. And then you have the internet that you pull in. And then there's this thing that college was supposed to do, and now has been largely transcended, maybe for the better, by online learning and dating sites. But what's supposed to happen is now you pick your ecosystem. And I think that's what most people, career-driven, miss. They try to hold on to this friend and family system of whoever happens to be around you. But that doesn't mean they have complementary interests that maximize your velocity towards something that you've decided is important. So you do have to release family and see who comes back, if anyone. And you do have to release friends and see who comes back, if anyone. And that's super lonely, maybe, for a little while, because these are people you have so much memory with, but that doesn't mean they're maximizing your velocity towards something. But you have to say, family, we may or may not talk to each other again, not because we don't love each other, but because 100% of my time is being poured into this thing that's important to me. And if that's not an interest of yours, we just wouldn't have time for each other. And same with your friend system. And then you very naturally attract and select from the whole world people who you amplify and amplify you because you have this very similar or maybe even common goal. And that's what we call a company. Who is your company? Who keeps your company? What is the company you keep? And the company you keep is your company. And now hierarchy, again, it all connects, doesn't make any sense. It's not like I'm the lead friend and you're the three levels down friend. Like, it's just your company. It's the people you talk to about clocks or painting or whatever you're passionate about. And that's what you make and that's what you do. And then you share money in a way that people think is fair. And if they don't think it's fair, that's a problem. And you try to address that. And you don't have titles and you don't have rank and you just change the world.
Wow, that's a really interesting thought about curating your own natural habitat. Awesome. So, Paddy, do you want to then go into the rapid fire round? Because we have a lot of questions for you and a quick rapid fire round, which I love, and it's the absolute favorite part of the podcast.
Oh, okay. So we're going to give you 2 minutes, Joe.
Oh,
wow. 2 minutes. Let me just get my clock because I'll totally forget. And what we're going to do, we're going to ask you for your best tips for people. It could be as simple as boiling an egg. Like, it could be anything. Whatever you feel is useful for the world that you'd like to share, whether that's work-related or not, that's entirely up to you. But we would love to hear Joe's top tips in 2 minutes. Are you ready? Oh, yeah, he's ready. He was born ready. Okay. Ready, steady, go.
Follow @orangebook_ on Twitter. @orangebook_ on Twitter is currently fantastic. Now, I don't know, maybe they'll really miss the plot tomorrow. But as of right now, they've got a phenomenal track record. It doesn't mean they're always right, but absolutely thought-provoking. And not like I'm a judge of what's right. Second, health and nutrition affect everything. And there's a lot of misinformation that's very well paid to be placed, so it's difficult. But it's worthwhile. Attempting to figure out health and nutrition and sleep pays off everything. Happiness is a wonderful leading and trailing indicator. And if you are not happy, even for 1 minute, calmly happy, not like ecstatically happy, calmly happy, if you're not calmly happy, even for 1 minute, there's a reason why. And it might be health or nutrition, or very often it's your internal compass, your ethics aren't aligned with what you're doing. And it, trying to figure that out is our internal journey towards awesome. And it's worth doing. If you are unhappy, even for 1 minute, very often it's because your ethics aren't proud of something you're doing right now. And trying to figure out how to still be fulfilling, provide for yourself, healthy, while pivoting to do what you're proud of, that's what's called your moral compass, and that's your fastest decision maker. And no spreadsheet is going to solve that for you. You've got to feel and try immediately a different action, and that might get you fired, and that's okay.
10 seconds.
I have a question if I can fill the 10 seconds. What is the worst advice you have ever received?
Oh, you are fantastic. I'd actually like to ask both of you that question too. To give me a moment to think and to listen, actually, Bonnie, can I ask you that? What's the worst advice you've ever received?
Maybe I can throw the ball to Patty so I can get a second to think as well.
I mean, that's a really good question.
So what's the worst advice I've ever given?
Oh, given. That's even better. The worst advice you've given. That's even better.
Oh, is it given or taken? I can't remember what the question
is. Given, taken.
Received is what the question, but oh, wow. You loaded it saying given. Worst advice you've ever given.
Wow. I'm buying more time now. The worst advice I've ever given. Oh, God. It's a really tough one. I'm going to just say the worst advice I was ever given, let's put it the other way, I think was when, as a kid, I was very creative. I used to do lots of doodling. I just used to always draw everything I see. And then I had a meeting with my careers advisor, and I was talking about my future career. And I said I want to become an artist. And instead of encouraging you, the advice was, well, here's a book, and it's got a bunch of jobs, and they're well-paid jobs. An artist does not appear in the book. So I would recommend you pick a different job, one that's in this book. And that was the advice I got. And ever since then, I kind of just stopped my creative side. I felt that it wasn't going to earn me money. It was just something that I should do maybe in my spare time. So that was probably the worst advice I've ever been given. And then about 2 years ago, I rediscovered visual thinking. And now I'm back to doodling. I'm a doodler once again. So
I want to doodle together.
Yeah, maybe
it's online for now, but we should have a doodle time.
Oh, for sure. Joe, you're going to have to join one of our meetups, which is the Visual Jam. And we doodle all the way through. So
yes, 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 yes. I have a similar tragic story. I went to college for the Bachelor of Fine Arts program. And I pivoted to computer engineering because I was like, how am I going to get a job? Now, interestingly, I do view my career as exactly the same. I'm a painter or a charcoals, really. Blending charcoals is really what I feel, except my media is companies. And I am a painter of management systems is how I justify those two. And I actually think that's what it is. And that's probably why it's weird to see or weird to duplicate, because most people don't think that way. I don't allow themselves. They've been told not to think that.
Wow, we're a bunch of artistic people here, because I'm into knife painting as well.
Knife, whoa, and I love it. Well, and yes, 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 and yes. I have also knife painted quite a bit. I'm not doing it currently. And now that you say that, I wish I were. That is awesome.
Oh, yeah. We should totally get a jam session to do all this doodling and knife painting and stuff. But
yes.
So, Joe, what is the worst advice you have ever given or received?
Maybe the worst advice I've given that I can think of now, is that I was talking to companies that were already doing continuous release, and I tried to move them back to the rigid framework of Scrum. And I think Scrum is an awesome stepping stone towards continuous release, but this was the other way. And if people took that advice, I don't know if they did. That company I'm thinking of right now, I'm not sure if they did, they would have all been unhappy like, yeah, the business performance would have reduced and et cetera, et cetera. But they also would have been unhappy. They would have felt the change. And I would have really made them lose months or years of their happiness and performance. That may be some of the worst advice I've given. How about yourself, Bonnie? Do you have a ready answer now?
I'm actually struggling to think because I've been fortunate to have really nice advisors all my life. But I think the worst advice I ever received was from one of my previous acquaintances, who said, you know, when you enter the job market, always try to be working by the book, and hard work is something that's going to get you so far. Well, when I was young, straight out of college, you know, I thought, yeah, hard work, being by the book, following all, you know, compliance things and, you know, making sure everything is on track was the way to go. Because, you know, that's how you're trained in college. That's how you're trained to think. And, you know, they expect you to kind of enter the job market saying that you're the best candidate who will make sure everything is working as is. Nothing is going to go wrong. And you're going to make sure that the company is, you know, going in the direction they ought to. But I think after all these years of, you know, being in the corporate, I don't swear by the line that, you know, hard work is something that's going to get you far. No, I think it is smart work, and smart working is the way to go forward. And that's the advice that I also give. And you know, that's the advice I really give to my younger sister and my other siblings. It's yes, of course, hard work is a part of it. Hard work. There is a lot of hard work that goes into learning stuff. But when you're implementing stuff, that's when you have to be smart. You got to be hardworking when you're learning, but you got to be really smart when you're implementing. And that's really what will cut it for you. So yeah, that's probably the worst advice I got ever.
Hard. Fantastic. Thank you, Peaky Agilist Podcast. It's just as fun to be on this program as I would have hoped or wished. I recommend joining to anyone who's considering contacting Peaky Agilist and saying, I'd like to talk to them, see if we could have an interesting conversation. It is truly as fun as maybe it sounds. Encourage you to do that. Thank you so much, Patty. Thank you so much, Bonnie. Let's continue the conversation on Twitter. I'm at Joe Justice. Everybody, please ping Peaky Agilist, please ping me, and we'll keep that conversation as warm, as exciting as anyone wants it to be. Please do consider my book, Scrum Master, the Agile Training Seminar for Business Performance. As a first-time author, I'm sure it's not written as smoothly as it could be. That said, I think the content is as good as it should be. I think the content is what I'm really proud of. And if you liked the types of thinking that we were talking about in this podcast, I think you'll love the book if you can make it past my early writing style. If you can redline content in the book to say you duplicated this isn't said very cleanly, and send me screen caps or a PDF or whatever that back, I will mail you a signed hard copy of the book to say thank you, so I can cut out. I think the real problem is the book is probably 100 pages longer than it needs to be, but which 100 pages? So if you can strike stuff out and help me find that, I will mail you, whoever you are on the internet, a paper copy of the book that I signed to thank you for helping me make whatever the next edition is leaner, more focused, more fun to read, because I think that's what I need. And if you're an awesome editor, or knows an awesome editor, I'd like to pair you up with the awesome editor that did get me as far as I have gotten, and with me to help me make the book more awesome. The content, I do think, is the world-changing correct content. So please do read the book, and sorry, please muddle through my first-time author writing style. And please consider my two Agile children's books, Everyone is Santa and Goodnight Nut, Goodnight Bolt. And consider joining one of my online courses. I do Europe time zone, Asia time zone, America time zone. They are all certified courses. That said, it's the type of work delivery that we're talking about in this podcast. So even if you're already a certified Scrum product owner, If you take that course from me, what it actually is what would Joe teach people who are funding projects and signing contracts at Tesla? That's what the course actually is. And it happens to also get you a certified Scrum product owner credential. So whether you have that or not, but if it's not from me, I do think the course is very different because my work experience and my vision of the world and business are not that common. But if you don't have that credential, you will also get that credential. Same with the Scrum Master class, the way I teach it. It's what would I recommend for everyone joining Tesla or SpaceX or OpenAI or Neuralink. And it'll happen to give you a certified Scrum Master credential. And I'm right now attempting to roll out what do I wish everyone at Tesla knew about engineering practices. And that's the Certified Scrum Developer Program is what I'm trying to make that be. And that course is not live yet. Right now it's called Agile Hardware Developer. And I do post that course. I hope for it to become a CSD course. I'd love to see you there, whatever company you're in. And then I do leadership workshops for companies that are considering going from waterfall towards agile methods like Scrum or Scrum at Scale or Scaled Agile or Nexus or Disciplined Agile Delivery or less. But also, if you're one of the very few companies in the world that wants to move from that to continuous release like the Musk companies do, man, that's what I need because there's not many companies that are ready to do that. And I end up getting frustrated when I talk to companies and they're saying, we just can't do a release in less than 3 years. And that's a lot of companies. And I'm happy to help them go from 3 years to 2 years and 2 years to 18 months and 18 months to 3 months. But I really want to talk to the companies that say, we actually want to release every three hours new product or faster. We want to do what the Musk companies do. The problem is when I try to explain that to most companies, they get frustrated because it's so far from their current reality. But if you're in a company that would actually want to try that, please contact me. I'll get to do business the way I really want to, and I'll get to use my higher value add maybe. Because I think that is very rare in the world. I think I'm one of the very few people that could actually help companies do that. So if you want to have a serious conversation about continuous release, all the way through management, funding, the implications for supply chain, the implications for engineering practice, new product introduction, new product delivery. I'm ready to talk to you. But if you want to go from 3 years to 2 years, yes, I will help you also. And we'll make that work.
Oh, wow. Joe, that is phenomenal. What can I say? We are so humbled and I'm totally humbled having you on the show and all your lovely words. Absolutely amazing. I do feel like this episode, it's gone way beyond my dreams, to be honest. I thought it was going to be awesome, but it's kind of gone beyond awesome. Is there a word for beyond awesome? I don't know. Scaling awesome. Let's call it scaling awesome. just made up a new term.
Continuous awesome.
There you go. Continuous awesome.
Maybe that's the name of the method. Maybe we just named it on the PK Agilist podcast. Maybe the book is Continuous Awesome.
Awesome. And then it probably needs an I at the end or something. So maybe three letters in there. I don't know. Barney, have you got any ideas?
CICDCA.
We've got to think about that one. But we'll share the links in the show notes of your awesome kids books that you mentioned there, Joe. So we'll get that out to the listeners. And I just want to say thank you so much once again. And thank you so much, Barney, as well. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much, Joe. It was awesome, awesome having this conversation with you. So many new things to talk about, to think about, taking so back so much with me as well. Thank you so much, Patty, for having me. And Joe, it was awesome to know you.
Right back at you. Next time we'll be doing knife painting and doodling and maybe charcoals. So to be continued and soon, maybe with a really good luxurious book.
And I'll wear a shirt next time.
Me too. All right. Thank you so much.